So welcome back to another Phuket List podcast with me, Nick Bramley. We call this the antidote to uninspiring goal setters, and it's aimed at poking a little bit of fun at those people who live their best lives on social media, putting stuff on for clicks and likes, and just telling you that their world is fabulous and they're going to rediscover themselves in Machu Picchu and other such nonsense. So if that's you, it's probably not the podcast that you're going to be listening to, but I've got a great guest today. One of my favourite people. I've had a few drinks with this lady in the past. We have a great afternoons out, and she's always good fun. So I'm going to introduce you to Deborah Carr. Deborah's Director of Total Spa Solutions in a company called Anada. And without further ado, Deborah, welcome to the Phuket List podcast.
Thank you very much, Nick. Nice to be here.
Always great to see you. Always good for a laugh, and always a great fellow Northeasterner with a great accent. So, yeah, as you know, we talk about three things that you have zero intention of being or achieving, which is fairly straightforward. That list's always easy, I think, isn't it? And then one that you do want to achieve. So, and I'll share one of each for the audience. But I always start with the guest first, and I love your first one. Your first one is something that annoys you because you experience it as a business or as part of that working with consumers. What's the first thing you've got no intention of ever being or doing, Deborah?
There is absolutely no way I will ever become a professional complainer.
Hang on. By the fact that it's a professional, is it not like the Olympics where there's an amateur status? Is it, are the people who are like really highly skilled at this then?
Oh, absolutely. I think there might be like secret clubs and badges, you know, for the amount of complaints you've got or the amount of things that you've got for free or whatever by simply complaining. Haven't, you know, worked most of my life in front-facing with consumers in hospitality and a little bit in retail and a little bit what we do in the spa industry. We come across this all the time. You can see these people that they're really just coming with the intention of complaining or finding something wrong with the experience just to try and get something for free back. You know, we call them in the industry, we call them spa surfers. You know, they just like literally go around surfing these spas and sharing the information with the mates on what the spas don't do 100% right, just so that they can come back for free or get some compensation or some discount. And it's just really frustrating, and I just can't bear it.
I don't get why, if the experience was so bad that you need to complain, that wild horses wouldn't drag you back free to somewhere that was that bad, would they? But they just after the freebies and maybe some additional, I don't know, you know, treatments or something of that nature.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I hear that quite a lot. You know, these, you know, war and peace emails of complaints, but yet they would, like you say, they'll come back for free. And like you say, if it was that bad, you wouldn't come back. You wouldn't even come back for free, you know. It's just so frustrating, and a bit like you said before, it's the way that it's done as well. You know, you hear with these like a Karen, don't you? Just so rude and abusive sometimes as well, which is just, there's just no need for it. And I think, you know, sometimes businesses do get it wrong, and there is room for improvement and certainly for feedback. But there's a way of doing it as well, I think.
I think there is. I think I like the idea of that there's been a secret club somewhere and they've all got like a bronze, silver, and you're going for your gold, but that involves getting an overnight stay complimentary and a spa and, you know, something else. And there'll be sort of levels of celebration within their sad little clubs and their sad little WhatsApp groups, I would imagine, won't they, really? But the Karen's bit's quite interesting. I've got a client called Karen. She hates the fact that she's now by name associated with, you know, what people call people, particularly came out of America, didn't it, where people are, you know, really heavy complainers and aggressive and in your face and whatever. So what do they call the blokes? If the women are called Karens, what do they call the blokes? Is there a name for the blokes?
I wonder. I bet there is.
Because it's like Barbie and Ken, isn't it? You know, Ken's like the cousin you don't want to invite to the wedding, and Barbie's the famous one. But you know, if there's a Karen, there must be a Trevor, mustn't there, or something? I apologise.
Yeah, or a Lionel. Yeah, what about a Lionel? It might be a Lionel.
Could be a Lionel. Well, we've just sort of excommunicated all Lionels listening to this podcast. So on that basis, Deborah, thank you for that. So is it just that they annoy you as a service provider and it's unfair? Is that what gets you goat, really?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think it's just that almost that premeditated mindset that, you know, these people are going to come in and you can offer them the best service in the world, but they're going to find something. And I just find it really unfair. And I think sometimes these businesses are put in their backs almost up against the wall with complaints because, you know, the trump card is they'll go on to TripAdvisor, they'll leave a review, you know, and these sort of things have got quite a lot of collateral for these businesses. So it's in a lot of cases, it's just a case of almost shutting them up, which I just find the injustice of it is it's just so annoying.
But then they know that, I suspect, don't they? I used to work with a lawyer and I'm sure he had a pre-typed letter for when he landed back from your holiday looking for any complaints that he could get money back or, you know, some kind of compensation. It was in the old days of sort of your Lund Polys of this world and stuff. Dear Lund Poly manager, I've had a horrific, you know, it's one of those sort of Little Britain, come fly with me, you know, Peter surname, I wouldn't go back. I would, you know, those kind of people, just horrific, really. You also think that most of these people who are professional complainers either don't work or they work in small-minded jobs, don't they, where they're looking for little faults in people. So I'm thinking, with all due respect to everyone listening, compliance and audit and stuff like that. So let's move on from that. You definitely don't want to be a Karen. You definitely don't want to change your name. You definitely don't want to be a professional complainer. I quite like the fact there's an amateur status and then some kind of pyramid league system, but we'll leave that for people to find out and explore. So I'm with you on that one. Totally understand that. Your second one, totally with you. Now, I don't know if this is because of the enclosure of what we're talking about, or whether it's just the fact that it's an absolutely pointless and dangerous thing to think about. But what's your second thing you've got no intention of ever doing, Deborah?
Oh, you will never, ever find me going caving. Just no. I mean, it's just an absolute point blank that climbing or crawling through a really enclosed space in the dark, in the mud, in the cold, with one little light that could go out at any time, is just not my idea of a good time. You know, and lots of people say, oh, it's the adrenaline. I don't need the adrenaline. I've got two kids to get out to school every morning. That's enough adrenaline for me. I don't need to put myself in a really enclosed space.
The thing with that, you just got to watch. There's a couple of really good films and documentaries out about the Indonesian kids who were rescued in the caves in Indonesia in about 2018-19, the football team. If you ever watch that and ever think, oh, caving's for me, you need locking up, you need checking out, don't you, really? There's no way that's for anyone, is really. Not at all. And they've usually got someone on the back, which even if you manage to get through the hole, your bloody air tanks are going to get smacked onto the... Just it's lethal, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. My husband always tells me a funny story of when he was an apprentice back in the day, and they used to do all these like orienteering and like outward bound days. And there was a particular, they went caving as part of this. And one of the guys that he went with was really nervous about doing it and quite anxious. But they, you know, the instructor sort of talked to him and said, you know, it'll be absolutely fine. You go in one after the other.
Hang on. Can you say, was it classed as team building as well? I mean, that's
it was.
The absolute bollocks of it, isn't it? It's team building. What we're going to do is we're going to drag you through somewhere way out of your comfort zone. And at the end of it, we'll all have a hug. Team building, right? So go on. What happened there then, Deb?
So they went, apparently they had to crawl through this, the sort of opening was literally you were crawling across your belly and it was one after the other. So if you were sort of four or five in a party of six, there's no way, you can't go forward, you can't go back. And it was all muddy and dark. And this guy was so nervous to start with and he picked out a glove. He found a glove in the mud and thought it was a hand, completely freaked out. It was like literally kicking and punching and they all had to go back. And it was a nightmare. This poor guy was terrified. But obviously afterwards they thought it was quite funny. But yeah, could you imagine that?
I'll be honest with you, it's as hard to go back as it is to go forward as well if you've got a line of people, because you're going to kick someone's face in, aren't you, when you're trying to scramble backwards in the dark because your light's on your head facing forward. What's that about, them little lights on your head as well? Is that all, is that it? Is that what you get? No chance.
And what happens if that the battery dies? Like, you're in the dark.
Yeah.
No, absolutely no chance.
Have you ever been to any of these shore caves, like Ingleborough, or any of the? I've been to Mallorca, and there's shore caves called the Caves of Drac, and I'll tell you a little story about that in a minute. But have you ever been to the Ingleborough shore caves in North Yorkshire, where the, I mean, you're not crawling down the proper, the massive, and you walk down them, and they're illuminated, and it's basically the stalagmites and stalactites. We went on school trips and stuff, but you've never even been in the shore caves, the big ones. It's just the fear of being underground. It's cold, wet, damp, and miserable.
Oh, absolutely no. Yeah, you wouldn't even get me in that, honestly. It's just not for me.
No.
And I kind of think it's underground and in there for a reason. Just leave it there. You know,
Yeah.
it's fine.
I'll be honest
Yeah.
with you, I suspect a cagoule's not your choice of clothing, is it really? You don't strike me as a cagoule kind of gal, really, Deborah.
Not really. Not really, no.
Well, let me tell you about the Caves of Drac, okay? I went years ago, like years ago, and I seemed to think it was really good. So the first time I went with my wife and my two kids, and my kids were quite small at the time, said, "We're gonna have to go to the Caves of Drac. It's fabulous. It's like a big shore cave." So we went in, queued to get in, went through, and it's because it's limestone and it's wet, it feels like it's plastic. So my kids are knocking, tapping on it, going, "I'm sure it's fiberglass, this." Like, they were really unimpressed. And at the end of the Caves of Drac in Mallorca, there's a lake, and you get on the gondola, and the gondola takes you with music and opera music, it takes you to an exit place. And I said, "We must do that. It's really good." And I remember it being like really impressive end to the thing. So we queued to get on the gondola. The gondola, we were on the gondola literally 18 seconds. It took us across this skinny lake and dropped us at the other side. And it was like, the kids were like, "What was that?" So the Caves of Drac now are a family story of, don't go on a trip with your dad. It's absolutely, if I mention anything, and Sarah and I went to Mallorca in the summer, and the first thing we saw in Palma Airport was a big advert for the Caves of Drac. I went, "Caves of Drac, Sarah." I won't tell you what she answered. I won't tell you what the reply was. But hence to say, we didn't go back. So I'm with you on caving. And the shore caves are okay. They're quite impressive, the Ingleborough ones and stuff like that. But because you're walking through them, and they're very high and they're quite impressive. But they do turn the lights off as part of the show, and you're thinking, no. But the actual stuff of crawling through confined spaces, and all it takes is, like you say, your light to go off, you feel a glove, these things come. So like, no, I'm with you. So far, definitely not going to complain. You'd complain if someone put you in a bloody cave, though, wouldn't you? I would imagine.
Oh yeah, I'm turning them up. Karen, getting a look in compared to
So we're not going to put
but
you in.
my I asked my daughter just to go back to the Karen thing. Well, I'd never heard of a Karen about a year ago, and I said to my daughter who's 12, "Well, what is a Karen?" And she said, she looked at me and she went, "Well, it's a middle-aged woman that likes to drink wine and ask for the manager." I was
Oh,
like, okay,
there you go.
that could be anybody, couldn't it? But yeah.
I'll be honest, a good description. So you're not going to be a Karen. You're definitely not going to go caving. Your third one makes you sound like a right old fart. But let's have a look. Let's have a look. But I'm with you on it, by the way, because I am an old fart. You sound like one, but I am one. So let's have a look at what's your third one. What have you got no intention of doing then, Deborah?
No intention of getting an electronic magazine subscription or reading books on a Kindle or a device.
I'm with you. It's a tactile experience, isn't it? It's a thing that you just enjoy the feel. You can see where you're up to. You can see what's left. You know, if it, I don't know, I don't even know how Kindle works, but I suspect it says you're on page 56 of 360. I want to see what that looks like. I want to see how much is left in that book that I've got to read and think, because I only read books on holiday. Will I finish this before we get to the airport is my requirement. So I can't do that on a Kindle. I can't tell on a Kindle. And I'm electronic magazine subscriptions just all wrong, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But again, like you, Nick, I like going to look at books and pick the books up and feel the books and, you know, even smell the paper. That, I
Yeah.
think for me, that's part of it. And it's sort of for me as well as it's counterintuitive reading a book on a device. Like that, no, that's wrong. You know, we're told we, you know, we're on devices and we're on electronics too much, but yet you want us to read on them
Yeah.
books? Like, no. That is not for me at all.
There's a certain anonymity about it. I suspect people on the tube who've got an electronic device are not reading, Tolstoy. I suspect they're reading some kind of chick lit or, soft porn or whatever keeps them going. Whereas if you got a book,
Interesting.
if you got a book, you've got it in the book, and people can see what you're reading, can't you? But again, if you're weird like me and you talk to people on the tube, it's a talking point, isn't it? How's your book? People, what? You're not going to say that. How's your Kindle, are you? So, is it the tactile feel? Is it just the fact that it's a step too far on the electronics? What's driving it for you then, Deborah? Why not?
I think it's just that tactile feeling and that sort of a sense of escapism about picking that book up. You know, I think I personally link electronics a lot with work. And I don't want that when I'm reading a book. I want that to be sort of my time and that quietness. And especially, you know, at night if you read, it's not having that light as well. And I know they say that's all they've sort of considered that with Kindles and things. But yeah, it's the whole experience, isn't it? And I also like that. What we used to do a lot when I was young is that sharing books, you know, somebody giving you a book that they recommend and they've read it and they've really enjoyed it
And
and
it's
you
well
can
thumbed. It's well
yes.
thumbed, and the spine's half broken, and it's got that thing in it. Yeah, I agree with you. And actually, books on a shelf look lovely, don't they? A Kindle on a shelf looks like a Kindle on a shelf, doesn't it? It's rubbish. So, there's a library effect, isn't there, really? So on that. So I'm with you, really. I've never read a book on a Kindle. My wife's got a Kindle, but she's also an avid book reader, so she does a bit of both. And I suspect that's something to do with the title she might be reading. I don't know, but we'll not get into that. But an electronic magazine, I mean, I've seen them. I subscribe to a football magazine, 442. I look forward to it comes and lands on my mat every month. And that lands on my mat. I'm thinking, oh, my magazine's here. And I read it and I pass it on to my mate who keeps them. Once I've read them, I don't keep them. But it says, oh, have you read the electronic one? No, I tried one. So I'm looking at it going, oh, it's not the same experience at all. Rubbish. We do sound like a couple of old farts, though, don't we? Statler and Waldorf off the Muppets, like, oh, whatever. But yeah, I'm with you. So not going to be a Karen, not going to go caving, not going to read anything electronically when you can read the paper version of it. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to share one of mine, and then we'll share one of each of the things that you'd like to achieve. Just a bit of fun. The one of mine, most people will subscribe to, I think. And it's not being awkward or difficult or being an ass. It's basically saying, I'm not going to keep in touch with holiday, inverted commas, friends. There's people you meet on holiday who are, well, let's put it this way, they usually immerse themselves in your life, don't they? Because you haven't decided to do it the other way around. And they happen to be sharing a space where you've put your towel on a bed and it's near the pool or the sea or whatever. The only thing you've got in common is you're in the same hotel and possibly, they're a football fan or whatever you have a chat about. And then suddenly it's like, how do we start eating tea with you? And hang on a minute, we go in the bar tonight. And oh, well, we go in the bar. We'll come to the bar with you. Well, there's more than one bar. Would you mind going to another one? Or worse than that, the ones who really, really are not going to get in touch with are the ones who say, oh, why don't we go and check out the entertainment? Because I absolutely guarantee, Deborah, that entertainment and hotel are my nemesis. I abhor the whole entertainment thing that they do. I don't care if there's a local cultural dance that someone's doing with maracas and a yellow outfit. Couldn't care less. Couldn't care less. Makes me a Philistine or not. I don't go on holiday for that. They can do it. I can see it in the background, whatever it might be. I don't want to then spend time with people who actually appreciate that because they're not my kind of people. And I'm definitely not going to be the guy who says, well, I might say, let's keep in touch, but I don't mean it. So if I meet you on holiday and say, keep in touch, chances are, don't probably mean it, unless you are like me and like my family, and we get on really well, genuinely. But that doesn't happen very often, does it? It's just somebody who just happened to be randomly has a towel down next to yours. What's your view on holiday sort of friendships, Deborah? With people that you randomly meet, are you a because you're a chirpy person like me, but does that mean you've kind of immersed yourself a little bit more than you maybe wish you had at times?
No, I'm absolutely the opposite on holiday, to be fair. Simply because we lead such busy lives as a family that this is the only time we actually get to spend it together. And I think that is so important that I would get really annoyed. And my husband's he sort of is the opinion that he likes the people he knows and he knows the people he likes and has absolutely zero interest in striking up a conversation with anybody else on holiday.
I'll be honest with you. Can he get that as a tattoo right across his chest? And then he will not get bothered. I know the people I like, and I like the people I know. Literally, that just means bog off. Don't talk to me. I'm not for talking. I love that approach. That's. I mean, if I met him on holiday, we'd maybe get on. I'm only joking.
So the same, and I like that analogy of like sharing the towels. It's the same like when you go away with when the kids are little and they always make a little friend, don't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and David's always like, don't make eye contact with the parents, just in case they see that as an in, you know. And the kids are like, can we go and sit with so-and-so? No, you can't.
I mean, I love the fact, because the kids are there to make friends and have fun and whatever. That's great. I'm there to relax. And like you say, it's you work hard and whatever. I love the idea of the fact that the kids then are the conduit for the parents to go, oh, hi, I'm Joan and I'm Trevor. And you're going, we don't really care. And then they go, shall we come watch the entertainment? No, we shouldn't. There you go. That's the end of that one for me. So I'm definitely not going to be the guy who's going to keep in touch with people on holiday, unless you are, you know, on an exceptional level, like really, really the same and you know, whatever. And I can count on actually no hands the amount of people I've kept in touch with from holidays. So, unfortunately, there you go. That makes me a miserable git. I don't know. I don't care. So we always finish this with one thing you'd love to achieve and then one thing I'd like to achieve. I'll take mine first because mine's dead easy. Yours is really strange. Mine's dead easy. I should be able to achieve this no problem, but I just haven't had, I can't be arsed, I haven't done anything about it. I want to get a new office chair that doesn't slowly lose its gas during the recording of a podcast, so that by the end of the podcast, I'm like some kind of sort of small creature hanging onto the top of my desk. I've got a chair at the moment, it's well battered, but it's just my chair in the office. And I think to myself, well, can't be bothered to go and buy one or buy one online and build it and then what do I do with this one? So every time I sit on it, I think it'll be fine, and it isn't. And it might be just it's knackered. It might be a weight thing. But the arms are all worn out. So if I wear a T-shirt, I flail all my skin off my elbows, but it's my chair. But I'm not, you know, I am going to buy a new office chair and celebrate. But I just think to myself, you know what? It takes effort and energy. I can't be bothered. And what do I do with the old one? So my ambition, massive ambition that it is, and that's what this is about, setting small goals that are achievable. Buy myself a new office chair. So if there's anyone listening who supplies office chairs and would like to get a sponsorship mention, please send me. I like the high backed ones, two arms, strong gas, and you know, plenty of sort of support for the back of my legs. But other than that, I'll get one eventually. I've been saying that for about 2 years. I blamed lockdown. How can I blame? I'm blaming nothing now apart from bored idleness. So my bucket list is the opposite. My bucket list is I want to get a new chair. But yours is weird. Now, I love that it's weird. So you need to have to explain. You've got an ambition and it's really impressive, but you have to explain the wording. So I'll leave you to explain that. Over to you, Deborah.
Okay. So I will tell you what I want to do first.
Yeah.
And then I'll explain it. So my ambition for next year is to take the first UK team to the AufGus World Championships in Germany.
Now, you can't say that without the obvious question from everyone listening to this going, what the hell is AufGus? Now, we talk about AufGus?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I love the fact that you want to take a team to compete at AufGus. I love the fact that you want to be the first UK team to compete at AufGus. No one knows what AufGus is. Tell us what AufGus is. Fabulous.
So AufGus is essentially like Eurovision, but done in saunas. So
hang on. Just if you stop there now, we'd probably get some kind of censure. Eurovision done in saunas. You're going to have to go further than that. Go on, Deborah.
So AufGus is it's quite an old sauna culture that is really, really popular in sort of Scandinavian countries and in Europe. And AufGus is actually a German word, and what that means is infusion. And as you become an AufGus master, And what that means is that as a guest, you would go into these saunas, and your Aufguss master would come in and take you through an Aufguss ceremony. So that involves pouring water onto the hot coals, essential oils, ice, things like that to create these lovely aromas within the sauna. It increases the heat, and then they use towel techniques to sort of circulate the air around the sauna to create a nice warm environment. But it's kind of done in quite a theatrical way. So it's not only are the techniques functional, but they also look really lovely as well.
Are we talking a bit like, I'm thinking rhythmic gymnastics with towels in a hot environment type scenario, is that right?
Yeah. But it's, so in a lot of European countries, the sauna culture is so ingrained into their life. You know, their local swimming baths will have a sauna. So instead of, you know, when you go into Bali, it's not just one to swim, it's one to swim and then one for an Aufguss session as well. So yeah. It's really, really popular. And then for the last, I think probably about 10 years, you can now compete and do these short Aufgusses in these amazing saunas. I mean, I think the biggest sauna in the world holds 350 people. It's like, and it's called the Colosseum.
Wow.
Even the stove that you pour the water on is like the size of a Snoopy table. It's huge. They've turned these into these incredible shows. They last about 15 minutes, and the Aufguss master will pick a theme, and it's all done to music. They've got light shows going on. They wear a costume.
Wow.
And it's, it's all cleverly done, obviously in time to the music, very rhythmical. And they do all sorts of throwing with towels and things like that. So it's really fun, lots and lots of energy. Very good for your well-being as well, because obviously you're having that sauna experience.
And just conscious of a little bit of time, where are you on your Aufguss journey to becoming an Aufguss master then, Deborah? I'm assuming you have to be a master to compete then, do you?
Yeah. So we went to sort of introduce ourselves this year at the World Cup in Holland, which was amazing. And then we've got the very first national competition, which will be held at Rudham Park in Harrogate in April next year. So it's starting to take off now, but it's still really early days. And a bit like you, not many people have heard of Aufguss yet.
Well, not yet over here, but it's obviously something to keep an eye on. That's fascinating. To be a UK team competing in something we've not heard of, doesn't matter that we've not heard of it. The fact that I would imagine the Finns, the Swedes, the Norwegians are pretty good at this, are they?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They've been doing it for a long time. Yeah.
Good stuff. I wish you luck with that. Well, listen, all that remains for us to say is thank you for being a fabulous guest on the Phuket List podcast. I knew you would be. Some interesting and strange, to be fair, stuff in your Phuket and bucket list, really. We're trying to create a bit of a movement, really, in terms of people who've got, you know, ambitions to not achieve massive things like climbing Everest and, you know, going to Machu Picchu and stuff, but little day-to-day things that make you laugh and make you think and whatever. So if you've got three things you'd like to not achieve and one that you would, then please get in touch. This podcast is available on all sorts of platforms. It's not quite on iTunes yet. That's a nightmare, but we're on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, YouTube, TuneIn, Podbean, Podchaser, etc., etc. And all that remains for me to say is thank you, Deborah, for being a fantastic guest, as I knew you would be. And I wish you luck with your team and getting that sorted and, bringing Aufguss to the UK.
Brilliant. Thanks, Nick.
No problem.